It's very nice to be here again and see so many familiar faces from so many different years of coming here to New Govardhan and speaking and sharing this retreat with you all. In thinking what to speak about this year, as I said, Keshava suggested to me to speak about the previous acharyas in our line. The reason that this is a very valid and a very valuable subject to hear is because as we grow an attachment towards them by recognizing their significance and their greatness, then we find ourselves more and more impelled to seek their help in advancing in serious Krishna consciousness. On a day-to-day level, we have so many concerns. We all have our practical realities to deal with. But the real purpose of our life, and this is very difficult to keep in the foreground, but the real purpose of our life is actually to develop in our Krishna consciousness. So whenever I, over the years, have approached the subject matter of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his teachings, I've always found that my first impression is almost as if he's very stern, and also extremely grave, because he speaks in a very, very absolute way, much more absolute than we can even imagine. That means that he differentiates between what is materialistic and what is spiritual in an excruciatingly uncompromising manner. For ourselves, because we are coming to the path of devotional service, there's so many areas that we're hazy upon, the areas where our consciousness may not be completely fixed. And practically speaking, because we're coming with so many disabilities, either we're coming from a Western cultural background, which means that we have none of the sanskaras or the impressions that are required to consider Krishna culture our culture. So we're always fighting against our upbringing and the way we do things and the way we have been raised and so forth. And many times for the Indian community, I've seen worldwide in India and everywhere else as well, with all their good qualities and whatever background they have, they're rooted in Hinduistic ideas, which are also quite crippling, because they don't actually have a firm understanding of what is the absolute truth. They have something that's somewhat superficially close to that, but it's not actually the same thing. So they too, in Kali Yuga, have a great disadvantage because they think they already know. So many times you'd go on the trains in India, when I was living in India, and people would say, "And how do you like our Bhagavad Gita?" And I would say, "Your Bhagavad Gita is very nice. And it is so nice to see you are a Westerner and you have taken up our Indian lifestyle." And then I would say, "Yes, and it is so sad to see that you are Indian and you have taken up our Western lifestyle." And then I'd say to them, and tell me also, what do you think is the best thing in Bhagavad Gita?" "Yes, yes, 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 yes." And they would not want to continue with the conversation because, practically speaking, they knew nothing of Bhagavad Gita. They were like spiritual retards or illiterates, but they were extremely proud because they had the cultural background that they could say, I'm brought up in this culture. So Kali Yuga, as we will hear, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was adamant, without a shadow of a doubt, that everyone in Kali Yuga is born as a Sudra. There is no one who has any right to have any pride in their culture and the pride in their upbringing when it comes to approaching the subject matter of the absolute truth, the transcendence. Nobody can say, "Oh yes, I'm very learned in this area," unless, as he says, if they have had the association of a pure soul who has given them the insights into what is beyond this world and what is the purpose of our life. So, as I was saying, when I pick up the subject matter of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and you also may feel this in hearing, The first reaction I usually have is one of feeling a little depressed, and it's a little shattering, disorientating, because he's uncompromising in his presentation and view. And then what I find, it's like the experience which some of you might have been obliged to have this morning of a cold shower. The initial experience is quite shattering. Oh, this is so horrible. And then afterwards one feels invigorated. So after the initial response to his fixedness, 100% fixedness of view, I always feel myself strengthened and very grateful for having taken his darshan. So right now I want to speak only about giving a very brief and rather abbreviated presentation of just his life, his birth and upbringing and up to his departure from this world, and not entering into the subject matter of his teachings. And then in the afternoon I'd like to take, when I was thinking how to present this subject matter, because there's three mornings and two afternoon sessions, I thought that a nice way to do it for the main session would be to break his teachings into two. If you've ever attended any kind of a Pushpanjali, you'll notice that Srila Prabhupada has two pranam mantras, whereas Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has four. So I was thinking to take the first two pranam mantras and their significance and speak about them this afternoon, and take the second two pranam mantras and speak on their significance tomorrow afternoon. And in that way, just as a method of breaking up or dividing up the subject matter, we can hear about today, we will hear about his teachings directly about Krishna. And tomorrow we will hear, and I have the pranam mantras so we can see them also, we will hear about his teaching of the message of Lord Chaitanya, and how they come together in one. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as we know, his father, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, was a very, very elevated and a very sophisticated Vaishnava. He wasn't a simple person, a village person, an ordinary man. He was actually a district magistrate, which was an extremely high position under the British government. And he was held in such high regard that when he finally was living in Swananda Sukhada Kunj, which was the name of his house in Mayapur on the Godram Dweep Island, the government then of India built a small railway so that he could come and attend to his duties in Krishnanagar, which was nearby. So he was a very highly placed personality. He used to live in different places. They would place him in different districts according to where there was any difficulty. And he was highly regarded by all the British district magistrates and the political elite of the British government in Calcutta and Bengal at that time. So he was very anxious in his heart that the teachings of Lord Chaitanya should be properly represented. And so he prayed and prayed that somehow or another he could have a son, somebody who would assist him with what he felt was his actual divine mission. And so on the 6th of February in 1874 means 22 years before Srila Prabhupada appeared in this world. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born in Jagannath Puri. So he was the fourth son of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And he was born, as we have heard, with the umbilical cord wrapped around his neck like a Brahman thread, which is considered an extraordinarily auspicious characteristic that indicates that this child is a very, very exalted soul, not an ordinary soul who's been obliged to come into this world as a result of his own activities, but a soul who has descended in a very saintly way. When he was 6 months old, his father named him Bimal Prashad. Prashad, he's the mercy of Bimala Devi. Bimala Devi is the consort, like we have Lakshmi Narayan, we have Radha Krishna. So Bimala Devi is the consort of Lord Jagannath, or the internal energy, spiritual potency of Lord Jagannath. So he named him Bimal, the mercy of the internal energy of Lord Jagannath. When he was 6 months old, the Rath Yatra cart was going down Grand Road. The Jagannath temple is here. Then there's an extremely long road that practically it waves very slightly. It appears to be straight as you're walking, but it turns very, very slightly. And after a few, maybe a couple of miles, it ends at another temple. And that other temple is called Gundicha. And every year when Lord Jagannath goes on the Rath Yatra carts, he goes down that road with thousands of people chanting and pulling the carts. And sometimes Lord Jagannath will stop. And when he stops, everyone tries to move the cart. Nobody can ascertain a reason why he stopped. They'll sometimes even bring elephants to try to push the cart. But Lord Jagannath, being the Lord of the universe, he stays where he wants to stay as long as he wants. Sometimes he doesn't even start the Rath Yatra on that day. And everyone comes and they get him onto the cart and the cart won't start. So he stopped, the cart stopped, right outside the house of Bhaktivinod Thakur. And everybody comes onto the cart when the cart stopped, and they couldn't move the cart for 3 days. Just imagine you all come for a retreat and 3 days later we hold the retreat. It would be a great inconvenience for everybody. But Lord Jagannath doesn't mind because he's the Lord. So if he wishes to stay anywhere, do anything, it's his all-merciful prerogative. So he stayed, the cart stopped right outside the house, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur took that opportunity to bring his young son up onto the cart before Lord Jagannath, and it said that a garland fell from Lord Jagannath himself and encircled the child, and then he gave him his first grain ceremony, the testing for whether he would take the Bhagavatam or the grains, and he gave him that right there, and he accepted the Bhagavatam as his choice, and therefore again it was indication that this is a great saintly person who has appeared. Then at different times they moved in different places as Bhaktivinoda Thakur was transferred with his work. And when he was just a young boy, a very little boy, he was running through the house one day and he saw some mangoes that were placed on the table, and he took a mango and started to eat it. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw it, and he came and he told the boy very mildly, he told his son that, you know, that mango has not been offered, it is bhoga, it has not been offered yet to the deity, so you should not have taken the mango. And we can imagine if we were chastised, or we chastise our young children like that, they forget it in a moment, and you let them forget it, and they go on and life goes on. But this little boy was so intent that he made a vow right then that for the rest of my life I will never eat a mango. And just imagine, 4 or 5 years old, to make a vow. And he followed that vow right up throughout his whole life, right until he left this world. And Srila Prabhupada would say, when somebody would offer him a mango, because in India, in Calcutta, mangoes, there's mangoes all the time. Mangoes are like as basic as water almost. Of course, they're seasonal, but they're always there. So when somebody would bring him a mango, like someone would offer you an apple, he would always say, no, no, I cannot take. I am an offender. And so he wouldn't take the mango. So again, another extraordinary characteristic of this boy. And by the time he was 8 years old, he was worshipping already under Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a very small korma deity. And he had memorized Bhagavad Gita completely. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself personally taught him. He taught him all of the books that he was writing, and he would read them to him. And his teachers, when he went to school, they gave him the name, because we may wonder, where did these names come from? His name was Bimal Prasad, but we call him Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So they gave him at the school where he was studying the name Siddhanta Saraswati, that he was so powerfully learned, he was so intelligent, they said, that you are like the master of all scriptural conclusions. So then when he was in 1885, he established the Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually established this society called the Vishva Vaishnava Raj Sabha. So Vishva means world, and Vaishnava Raj, king, or in this case the great. It was used as the, in terms of great. Sabha is an assembly. It's translated into English as the great assembly of worldwide Vaishnavas. So this is a forerunner to what Srila Prabhupada was empowered to establish in the form of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur already had this as his ideal, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had appeared to push this forward. So he read extensively and established his own society when he was about 18 years old, called the August Society of Celibate Students. And for some time he had some young men who joined that society. But naturally we can imagine that he was the only one who was august enough to remain in that society. And so he himself retained his determination to become, to have a celibate lifestyle. But his friends and other students, they all took the different courses of their lives. So he continued in his life. And... wait one second, please. So then after that, he helped his father and travelled with him. And when he was 25 years old, he was initiated by Srila Gokishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And I think we've also all heard that story, how his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, told him, you should accept this very great renounced Vaishnava as your guru. And he went to Gokishore Das Babaji Maharaj, but Gokishore Das was a completely avadut Vaishnava. That meant that he didn't follow any social norms. He lived sometimes under an upturned boat. He would chant on strings that he tied together. He would sometimes eat out of a bowl that was made out of a half of a skull. He would do so many extraordinary things when he was chanting and his chanting wasn't working. He would go into the Ganga up to his neck and wouldn't come out. He was feeling some lack of inspiration. And he acted in so many extraordinary ways. And his primary desire was that he should not be interrupted with his internal mood of devotion by all of the challenges of materialistic people who would come and seek his blessings for some reason or another upon their lives. And he had no interest in this. In other words, he was not in the mood, as we see with Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, of a preacher. He was in the mood of a person who is completely living in this world but completely not of this world. So he looked and acted like he was very, very unusual and eccentric. And whereas Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so highly learned. So then when he went to him and requested of him that he would give him initiation, Gokishore Das Babaji Maharaj immediately denied. He said, I cannot. You are such an intellectual. You know so many things. And I don't know anything. I'm illiterate. You should go find someone else. So he begged him and begged him. And finally, when he got to a point where he said to him, if you will not take me as your disciple, then I shall go and commit suicide because there's no use to my life. Then at that particular point, then Gokishore Das Babaji Maharaj accepted him as his only disciple, because he had no interest, Gokishore, in taking disciples and establishing any kind of a preaching movement. So he accepted him as his only disciple and initiated him. And soon after that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur returned to Jagannath Puri. And there they lived for some time. But there was, in Haridas Thakur, in his the temple that was established at his samadhi where he left this world, there was one very renowned Babaji came to live. And he was preaching something that was against, opposite of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. He was very well known to the people, but he had some fault in his preaching. He was saying, for example, that the Hare Krishna mantra cannot be chanted out loud. It should be chanted silently. If you chant it out loud, this is an offense. And he also was dressing one of his followers in a feminine way and claiming that this man was actually Lalita Devi, associate of Srimati Radharani. So these things were, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur could not tolerate them because they were incorrect. So he spoke out very strongly and preached very strongly against him. But the local people were very partial to this Babaji. So there ensued a great controversy in which Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggested to his son, so that he would not be disturbed in his own devotional activities, he should return to Mayapur, which he did. And from then on, he stayed mostly in Sridham Mayapur. You will see that if you go, when you're in Mayapur, you go to the Yogapit, which is the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, and there is one very nice temple. And if you go further along the road, you see that you come to what is known as the Chaitanya Math. So the Chaitanya Math, it was a place known at that time as Brajapatan. And at that place, when he came back to Mayapur, he decided he would stay there and chant 1 billion names of Krishna. This became his vow. So he sat there and he chanted and chanted and chanted in a grass hut. When we hear these things, by the way, we're not supposed to feel that, oh, I could never do that. Of course, we could never do that. As if we're being asked that this is our challenge, that why aren't you doing this? But we're asked instead to realize what stamina, what a transcendental stature these personalities have, and therefore how much they can be valuable in helping us as we aspire on our little tiny ant-like journey towards transcendence, how greatly they can help us. Because as we understand that, then quite naturally we take and seek their shelter in so many ways. So he began chanting 300,000 names a day, just like Haridas Thakur, sitting in a grass hut, eating only one time a day, very little. And when the rains would come and the roof of the hut was starting to, thatch was starting to wear thin, he would put an umbrella up and keep chanting. He didn't want to deal with anything other than just chanting. And he continued to do that for almost about 5 years, I think he was chanting like that. And then, at a certain point in his chanting, soon after that, he met one young man came who had been inspired to come to him, and he became his first disciple. So then in 1914, this is just around, just before World War I, I think, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he departed from this world. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was extremely bereft. Then the following year, at almost exactly the same time, Srila Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj also disappeared from this world. And just around the same time, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was invited to come and start his preaching in Calcutta. But he was feeling so lost without his two spiritual guides and advisors who were so dear to him that he didn't really feel like he wanted to do anything. In fact, he basically felt that he wanted to also leave this world and be with them. But then he had a wonderful dream in which appeared to him all of the great acharyas, and they all gave him the same blessing. They told him, you go forward and you preach. I'll see if I can find his exact words. So he preached and he decided to go to Calcutta and begin his preaching there. So he went to Calcutta. And while he was there, he made more disciples and he established a printing press and began to print the works of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So the dream in which he had was when all of these personalities came and they told him that you should go forward and don't be afraid. We will give you the inspiration and all the money that you need, unlimited money, unlimited people, unlimited resources are all just waiting. You go forward and be very brave and speak the message of Lord Chaitanya. And it's interesting to note that Srila Prabhupada had a similar revelation on his way when he was coming to America, where again he had no real concrete understanding of what he was about to meet. He didn't really believe that he would be able to influence the Western people because he had met a few Westerners already. They had come to India and he saw how vastly different their culture was. And he would tell us that when I went there and I told them, oh yes, he had a very, very clear idea, because when Lord Zetland, who was a firm follower of the Gaudiya Math later when they went to England to preach, he was a very famous Englishman, he asked the disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, can you make me into a Brahmana? And he said, yes. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati replied, yes, we can make him a Brahman. All he has to do is follow these four regulative principles. And Lord Zetland replied, impossible. So Srila Prabhupada did have some understanding that Westerners were going to find it impossible to take up the teachings and the lifestyle that he was coming to represent. But still he was given this assurance that you go there, everything will be there, it's all going to be revealed as a matter of time. Because this is the mission of Lord Chaitanya. It's not the mission of one man or two men or extraordinary people even. It is the mission of Lord Chaitanya that will expand and unfold in its own natural way. So he began preaching and he accepted sannyas from a picture, a photograph. He had no god brothers, he had no, his guru figures who had already left this world. So very carefully he installed a picture of Srila Gopishodas Babaji Maharaj and he accepted sannyas from the picture. And then after that, this was in the early, about 1920, his preaching began. So for the next 16 years, his preaching was very powerfully taking place. He established 16 different Gaudiya Maths throughout India. He sent disciples to the West. He gave them very powerful words to speak. They went to England first, and they met the Queen, Queen Mary. At that time, they met different dignitaries in the British government, and they tried their best to establish the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. But practically speaking, they could do very little. And they had a great deal of help from India and money and support and encouragement from India. But all they could do, they established one small Gaudiya Math, one elderly lady became initiated and a few other people showed interest, but nobody else took up a change of lifestyle. So this has to be seen against the amazing results that Srila Prabhupada managed to achieve in his preaching. We don't see this in a gloating way or in a way that makes us proud, but we can understand that Srila Prabhupada very, very clearly was so highly empowered by Lord Chaitanya that he could bring Krishna consciousness to so many countries of the world and planting the seeds so that this Krishna consciousness movement will gradually, generation after generation, will expand to such a degree that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is predicting that from every town, every village, just imagine in this area, if every town, every village, from the shores of the ocean to the banks of the rivers, everywhere, everyone will accept this Krishna consciousness, this chanting and worshipping of Lord Chaitanya. So I'm going to have to keep this quite brief because we want to fit into the schedule. But in his last years of very intensive preaching, he went to different places, he met different people and established the Yogapit, where Lord Chaitanya's birthplace, established also the Parikram, He printed many, many books, formed society, the Gaudiya Math, and he was extremely revolutionary in his presentation. He rode, for example, in a car. Now that would sound so strange to us, that somebody was revolutionary by riding in a car. But if you could understand the times in which he was appearing, for a sannyasi to do something like that, and when a cars were so novel, that I believe someone told me recently that the car that he rode in was one of the only two or three cars at that time in Calcutta. So it was such a revolutionary thing, a car. And a sadhu was supposed to be somebody who had nothing to do with anything of this world. And here he was placing these two things in such close connection. These material advancement was beginning to take shape, and the unworldliness of a sadhu, he was saying, no, this is no longer what is required. And he was practicing which what we have heard of, and we sometimes misuse even, yukta vairagya, or using whatever there is in the service of Krishna. Not Falgun Vairagya, where we say that actually everything, it's all material things, we should get far away from these things. And not on the other side, where one is trying to enjoy the world, but something somewhat in between, but transcendental also, wherein we take the things of this world, understanding that they belong to Krishna and using them for his pleasure. So he was very influential in establishing these things. I will read you a couple of quotes that he spoke. Possession of objects not related to Krishna is our main malady. Here's another one. As dalliance with the body in luxury increases, so wanes the spirit of service to the Lord. And when faults in others misguide and delude you, have patience, introspect, find faults in yourself, and know that others cannot harm you unless you harm yourself. He was very, very, very powerful and had many, many followers. And then towards the end of his life, which was he departed from this world, his pastime of departing from this world was in December 1936, the 31st of December, very last of 1936. He left this world, he was in Calcutta at the time. And he was no longer very much speaking to his disciples, but he left them some final message, and I would like to speak that to you. He said to his disciples, "We are all sojourners on the path of death. Everyone has to die. Therefore, in this state of life, whether one is male or female, high or low, king or subject, rich or poor, learned or foolish, everyone can make this very rare human form of life successful by becoming a servant of the eternally pure, completely blissful Lord Hari. Even in this conditional life, one can become liberated. Therefore, it is overwhelmingly necessary to try." He said, "Do not become unenthusiastic upon seeing that the majority of people in this world are not accepting the message of Krishna's sincere service. And never give up the audition and glorification of topics of Krishna. They are your own personal worship and your all in all. Being humble like a blade of grass and patient like a tree, constantly glorify Hari. We are nurturing a desire to dedicate this good-for-nothing body in the Sankirtan sacrifice of Sri Krishna Chaitanya and his associates. We are not at all desirous of any heroism in fruitive actions or religion, but our real condition is to become the dust at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa Prabhu birth after birth. This is our all in all. the line of Bhakti Vinod will never be closed. With even more enthusiasm, you should become engaged in preaching the desire of Bhakti Vinod's heart. Amongst you, there are many capable and accomplished men. We have no other desire at all. These are our only words. Taking a blade of grass between my teeth, I fall down again and again and pray that I may become the dust of the feet of Sri Rupa Goswami birth after birth. There are various types of inconveniences while staying in this world, but there is no need for us to become extremely afflicted by these inconveniences or to try to dispel them. While staying here, it is necessary for us to gain an introduction to what our eternal life will be and to what entity we will attain to after all these inconveniences have been removed. Here, it is compulsory to make decisions about all those objects which attract and repulse us in various ways, both what I do want and what I do not want. Then he said something very powerful, which oftentimes I myself personally remember. He said, "We will be drawn by the attractions and repulsions of this place to the same degree as the amount of intervening distance there is between us and the lotus feet of Krishna. When we go beyond the attractions and repulsions of this world and are attracted by the transcendental name, then the topics about the mellows of service to Krishna can be understood. At the present time, topics about Krishna are greatly startling and perplexing. Adventitious occurrences are obstructing our eternally needed realization. And to eliminate these, everyone who holds the name of a human being is more or less consciously or unconsciously engaged in a struggle. To enter into that eternally needed kingdom beyond reality, beyond duality, is our only necessity. May all of you with one aim and in a single voice attain the right of serving the original Ashraya Vigraha. May the flow of thought of Sri Rupa Goswami's followers stream all over the world. And may we never, in any condition whatsoever, show aversion to the sacrifice of chanting the Sankirtan of Sri Krishna. If there is ever increasing attachment for this, perfection on all sides will be achieved. May all of you, by the earnest pursuance of Sri Rupa's followers, preach the words of Sri Rupa Raghunath in a fearless voice with supreme enthusiasm." So we know also of Srila Prabhupada telling us how he wrote a Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in this final year, in which he spoke very strongly his understanding and realization of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mission. So I will read just one last section where Srila Prabhupada speaks about his guru, because it is very helpful to hear from him. He says, "Bhaktivinoda Thakur desired that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message should be accepted by the East and the West equally, and that both the Indians and the Europeans and the Americans should dance together in the ecstasy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. That was his desire. Bhaktivinoda Thakur expressed the desire that when shall I see this happening, that both the Eastern and the Western people are united on the basis of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's cult and dancing together in ecstasy. That was his ambition. This was the ambition of Lord Chaitanya, it was the ambition of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur took up this affair, this business. He wanted, first of all, that every student, any disciple, every disciple, especially those who are competent, he requested you take up this mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and preach in the Western culture, in the Western countries. This was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's attempt. Before that, even the acharyas, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, they left literature, but they did not attempt to preach practically. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very, very anxious to preach this cult, of Chaitanya cult in the Western countries. This is his, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's, special contribution. So we should, in summing up, in conclusion of speaking, we should understand that Lord Chaitanya is the one who wishes that all the souls in this world, all the suffering souls, we don't sometimes think of ourselves as suffering, we think that we're fairly happy. But practically, if we were to understand our eternal disposition, we would understand how meager is our happiness in comparison to what is actually our birthright happiness, our eternal spiritual happiness. So he wished that all suffering souls should unite together in the chanting and the dancing and the hearing of Krishna's names and in development of their love for Krishna. And similarly do each of these great personalities. And each one has their own contribution. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his contribution was that he wished it. He wished that East and West should unite. He started by writing something to begin that revolution, but it was all that was he was empowered to do was to have a very burning desire. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took that further, and he established a preaching mission which brought the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the West. And then, of course, Srila Prabhupada, on behalf of the previous acharyas, he brought the teachings to the West so powerfully that he travelled all over the world and he met so many young people and he convinced them, despite all the difficulties involved, to try to change their lifestyle in such a way that they could develop their love for Krishna. So we will see in the future, Srila Prabhupada is no longer physically present with us, and we will see in the next 100 years so many more exalted personalities will appear and they will push on this same movement. So we are here, we have our little place in history, we are little, they are great, but we should accept their gifts very gratefully in our two hands and do the best that we can with them. From wherever we are, whatever is our position in life, we should take something of the feast. There's a big feast plate that they are wishing to offer us. We should take some of their prasad in the form of chanting and associating with the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I'll stop here so that we can keep our schedule for the rest of the day. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.